Monty and Rias versus Movies.
2023 edition.
2023, indeed it is.
So we decided that we're going to do our show a little differently this year. Instead of versing an entire genre, we got these movie pass things that get us into several free movies a month.
AMC, not movie pass.
No, not movie. These are passes to AMC. I believe it's the AMC Stubs program.
Yeah.
Which allows us to see, I think, a couple of movies every week.
Three movies a week being for free. And we have not been doing that for
years.
For some reason,
going out to see movies for the last couple of years just hasn't been our priority.
But you know what? We like movies.
We do like movies. So we decided that we had to either cancel our Stubbs program.
No.
That's what I said. No. Or we had to start seeing more movies. And what excuse do we have to see more movies? Well, we have to have something for our podcast. So this year for
2023,
it's Monty and Rias versus new movies, mostly.
Yeah. I'm going to say that we're going to go to a movie theater every weekend and see a movie. It might not be a new movie.
True. We might go to a revival theater and see a movie.
Yeah. We're so sad because we did Strange Days on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, we should have gone to that.
Yeah.
But we didn't know.
Yeah.
It's the saddest.
But, you know, if there comes a weekend where none of the new movies interest us and one of the many revival houses in Seattle has something interesting, we might watch that. You don't know. You don't own us.
You can't tell us what to do.
Go ahead and try.
So anyway.
No, we won't. See?
So anyway, it's Rias and Monty versus mostly new movies for 2020. Is that even going to fit on the screen? How about just Rias and Monty versus movies?
That's it. Monty and Rias, or Rias versus Rias and Monty, whichever order it is, versus movies, period. We're just versus movies.
Yes.
Although in this case, we might be versusing each other.
Maybe. It is possible. We just saw a movie that we have different views on.
We saw Babylon.
Babylon.
Babylon. Like Avalon.
That's very Roxy Music of you.
Yes. So Babylon is a movie that came out in 2022, very late in the year, made by Damien Chazelle, and it's about...
According to the IMDb, it is a tale of outsized ambition and outrageous excess. It traces the rise and fall of multiple characters during an era of unbridled decadence and depravity in early Hollywood. Now, you know, I am all about unbridled decadence and depravity.
Yeah. So, what'd you think of the movie?
I felt like it was the length of the movie was pretty long, but that didn't bother me. What bothered me was I felt like it didn't know what it wanted to be.
That's interesting
to me. It starts off with there's goofy comedy bits here and there in it, but also people killing themselves, and it's all over the place.
I loved that of this. I thought this movie knew exactly. So it's called Babylon.
And
I believe that's clearly a reference to Hollywood Babylon.
Of course.
The book, is it by Ken Anger?
It is by Ken Anger.
Nice. Which is all about, you know, the horrible things that Hollywood get into, like the horrible parties and starlets being dumped off on the street and that sort of
thing. Yeah. I mean, it's got a lot of stuff in it. Later proven untrue, but it doesn't matter because now it is Hollywood legend.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of Hollywood Babylon was, in fact, made up.
Some of it was...
Yeah. So what this movie does, I think, is it takes the Hollywood that is described in Hollywood Babylon and turns it up to 15.
It definitely turns it up to 15. Good heavens.
Like, we're going to show a party. No, we're going to show an orgy. No, we're going to show a Fellini party. No, we're going to show a Fellini plus Eyes Wide Shut party, and it's going to go on forever, and you're going to love every second of it. Or I did. I loved that party. I wanted the whole movie to be that party.
I've got to say, I really enjoyed that party. It's probably because I haven't been to a party for years, so I'm living vicariously through the orgiastic excesses of others, which is really the safest way.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly. But before the party, the movie opens with some guys who have to bring an elephant to the party.
Yep, and there's a complication because the guy with the truck thought it was for a horse, and his truck can't handle an elephant.
So they put the elephant on the truck, and they have to tow it with a car and also manually push it up a hill.
They should have just ridden the...
They should have ridden the elephant. It would have been faster than the speed they were making in the car. And then the elephant decides to take a shit all over the guys who are pushing the car, who are one of whom is our main character.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was... I didn't like it. No, sir. I didn't like it at all.
I felt
like it set a tone like we were going to get to see, like it was going to be a gross-out comedy, and that's not what it was going to be.
There are a few times in this movie where the grossness suddenly turns up. There's the elephant shit scene right at the beginning. That was our dog. Ignore her. And there's a scene where Margot Robbie vomits a lot.
A lot.
And I don't know. I liked those scenes. I thought that they were...
I liked the vomiting scene.
I'm trying to figure out how to put this, because it's a fundamental disagreement about the movie. I liked that the movie opens with an elephant shitting all over some people, because it says this is a movie where things can happen. It's not just a Fellini-esque party. There's a girl actually peeing on a guy's face. There's elephant shit. There's going to be vomit later on. I thought that established some stakes to the movie, that if it had not happened and we had just rolled up into the party, I think it would not have been.
I felt like it would have been fine to just roll up into the party. I don't think that the elephant shit really did anything. Monty feels like it set a tone. I felt like it set a tone that was then ignored for much of the rest of the movie. So I don't feel like it set a tone. I felt like it stuck out and was a tonal dissonance with the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I feel like the shadow of the elephant shit hung over them, that the whole time you're watching, you're like, but this is that movie where an elephant shit all over some people. So any time they went back to the grossness well, like with the vomiting, you're like, yeah, well, that'll happen.
I felt like they need to decide if they're paying homage to Preston Sturges or John Waters.
Both. That's what's great about Babylon, and that's what's great about the movies. The movies can be both. It's really a love letter to the movies.
It kind of is a love letter to the movies, but it's like the kind of love letter a stalker would write.
Yeah. So, like Manny, right? Manny starts off as a kid being covered in shit.
Right. Manny is one of our main characters. He's a Mexican dude who is working for the guy that throws the parties.
Flea. All right. I just wanted to say Flea.
But Flea is in it. Anyway, Manny is working, helping set up this party. He's bringing the elephant. He's able to put people on the guest list.
It's his job to figure out how to spirit the starlet who has passed out of, not a starlet, actually, she's basically a glorified ex.
Yeah.
But she passed out after peeing on that guy's face, and he has to get her out of the party before anybody sees
her. She has OD'd on drugs.
Yeah. Although, as Ryan pointed out during the movie, I feel like a lot of the people would not care that somebody was unconscious.
Yeah, this seems like a party where there's just going to be a straight-up parade of unconscious people being carried out the door.
At the end of the party, there are unconscious people everywhere.
They felt like they had to distract people so they could get this unconscious girl who OD'd out. And I'm like,
but you know,
you got a live jazz band.
It's a scene where we see that Manny is good at fixing problems, and also he brings the elephant into the party, which...
Yeah, I really expected that elephant to kill some people.
Yeah, so that's another...
Or to shit again.
That's another important moment. When the elephant comes in, you clearly hear somebody say, "What the fuck?"
Yeah.
And that's like the elephant shit, right? It grounds the movie, is my argument, to where this is a real party because people are cursing.
Yeah, people are freaked out by the elephant, as you would be if you were in a party that was packed literally with naked people like sardines,
and all of a sudden
an elephant shows up.
Yeah.
And you've got to clear a path. I'm surprised people weren't crushed to death.
Maybe they were.
Maybe. We don't know.
So Manny goes from there, and he becomes a producer, and he goes through a whole career. And then at the end of the movie, he's been run out of Los Angeles.
Right.
He did not go get a job in New York, which is odd.
This is because there is a girl who shows up at the party.
Well, hang on. I was going somewhere with that.
Go.
At the end of the movie, Manny is watching Singing in the Rain. And at first he's crying because he realized the events he lived through are now farce for people. But then he sees Gene Kelly's singing and dancing, Singing in the Rain, and he starts to smile while he's crying because he realizes that the movies are good.
Well, he realizes, and also that he made a difference, that the things he did are recorded even as comedy fodder for Gene Kelly, but he was there and he did that.
Yeah, but...
And became part of... Because a lot of this movie is about people chasing immortality.
But he's crying because of Gene Kelly singing in the rain, which he didn't have anything to do with. I really think he's just like, oh, but the magic of cinema. And then the weird montage at the end of the movie really hammers home, you know, look, Un Chien Andalou, Avatar, The Matrix. It's all movies, all of it, whether it's sleazy or glorious, it's all cinema.
I felt that the reason he was crying was because the specific scene that's being referenced in Singing in the Rain is the one where the girl has the real strong Brooklyn accent.
Yeah.
And he's trying to get her, and they're trying to train her voice, and that's what they were trying to do with the woman he was in love with.
Yeah, that scene, he's crying the whole way through. That scene starts, he looks at it, he starts crying. Then the camera goes and we see everyone else in the theater. We see a girl who is clearly like, I'm going to be the next star. And we see kids kissing. We see people eating popcorn. We just see people experiencing the movie. And then when we go back up to him, he's not even looking at the screen. Then Singing in the Rain, the song starts and he looks up and he smiles.
Right.
So I really don't think it's because he had anything to do with that part. It's just...
Okay.
That's my argument for why Babylon, while gross and bloated, is a love letter to the...
I agree that it is a love letter to the movies, much like Juan Tonton, the dog who saved Hollywood.
Tell us about Juan Tonton, the dog that saved Hollywood.
It's sort of based on the story of Rin Tin Tin.
Makes sense.
And it has cameos by everybody that was alive at the time that it was made, which was the 70s. So you get some pretty questionable Mae West propped up in a chair like a taxidermied monkey. It's something, but it's also about the history of Hollywood in a way, and it kind of felt, I don't know, there's just something about Babylon that made me think of that.
Yeah.
Possibly the way that they show the eras and the changes in movies, although the dog didn't have to adopt to Soundies very much because he's a dog.
Clever.
The other main characters in the movie are a young actress who wants to be a star, and is just a hot mess. Oh my God.
She's Margot Robbie. She's amazing.
She's
in this movie.
In
her first scene that she actually gets to act in, like the first scene that the character gets to act in, I mean, she has to start crying and stop crying, which she can do like a party trick. She's like,
okay, next take, I want you to let one tear out. You need to let your eyes well up for 3 seconds and then one tear.
And she does it, and then the director calls cut, and it's like, blink, okay, what else do you want to do? And then you get the line, how do you cry so easily? She just says, I just think about home.
Yeah.
She
is messed up, this girl. She loves her cocaine, and she has a gambling addiction, and she is an absolute party girl. Oh, my God.
Yeah, she's got problems, I think.
She's a hot mess. She is a hot mess from beginning to end, but she becomes a movie star despite the scandal because she is she's Margot Robbie.
Yeah, the internet says she's based on Clara Bow, although she doesn't. This is one of your complaints. She doesn't look like Clara Bow or indeed any silent movie actress.
Yeah, the silent movie actors in this movie, the character, they don't look like silent movie actors look.
Yeah, hairstyles have changed a lot since then.
Yeah, and they're just letting Margot Robbie's hair be long and dangly. And I don't know.
I am of the opinion that Margot Robbie was supposed to be a modernistic actor in an old silent film world, but that doesn't really work because later seemed to be bad at dialogue.
Right. And the other character in the movie that we... There's a couple more characters we follow. One is Brad Pitt.
Remember how in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood he was playing an old actor? Well, here's playing an old actor. Brad Pitt. He is your choice for somebody when you just want to look at someone and think, oh, that's an actor. That guy acts.
Yeah, he's kind of based on John Gilbert a little bit. Like, they're all based on someone a little bit.
Yeah, he had a Douglas Fairbanks feel to me more than John Gilbert.
Right.
Just because of the roles we saw him playing in Silent Time.
Yeah, there's definitely... He's one of those guys, though. He's your silent film leading man transitioning into talkie.
And he's a good silent film actor. Like, and in one scene, they have like 5 minutes to get the shot, and they've just gotten the camera driven in.
And he is so drunk, he cannot stand up, and the sun is going down. He steps in front of the camera and kills it.
Yeah. Once they say action, he's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked that. I thought he was very good in this. I'm not like, I don't really like Brad Pitt that much in general, but he's very good at being a movie star.
He is very good at being a movie
star. Yeah.
And then there's also Sam, who kind of shows up, the trumpet player.
Yeah, there's a...
There's musicians the whole time, because there were musicians on set during silent films, which is a weird thing to do, but I guess they did it.
In some cases, they didn't always do it. Yeah, it's he plays a character named Sidney Palmer. This actor named Jovan Adepo.
I want to say this movie, every silent movie does have a live musician, even if it's just a one-shot bar scene. There's a guy with a banjo.
And I really like Sidney Palmer's character. I really like the character Sidney Palmer. First off, because this movie has an amazing score that's with a lot of great jazz trumpet playing in it.
Yeah, I'm going to be listening to the soundtrack a lot. Back in that first Fellini-esque party, this music gets more drum and drum heavy, and it's really visceral.
I really like the score of this film. I will be listening to it in my spare time. But the other character we follow is Sidney Palmer. He is a man who has a band. He is a black man. His band is not integrated. They're all black. The studio decide that they're going to make some race pictures and they want him to be a star.
Which is a good idea.
Which is a good idea because he's super, I mean, he looks great.
That's Manny's idea, and Manny gets complimented by Irving Thalberg.
So they set Sidney up to be in a movie, and then they put the spotlight on him and they don't light the other band members. And they can't show that in the South because it makes him look like his skin is too white.
He doesn't look like a white man.
He does not. He does not in any way appear to be a Caucasian man.
So the solution, although this guy has been starring in movies for a while now, is to give him some burnt cork and tell him to go into blackface.
Yeah.
Which he does for this one movie, so everybody else gets a paycheck, and then he walks out of the studio system forever, and good for him.
Yeah, good for him. At the end of the movie, we find out he's in a jazz band in Harlem doing radio shows, and I'm like, good for him.
Yeah.
He's a great musician. He does not need to be tangled up in this nonsense.
There's one other character I want to call out. I don't know what her real character name is, but she's Anna Mae Wong.
Yeah. Yeah, there's an Anna Mae Wong character.
Who, Lee Jun Lee, played by Lee Fei Zhu.
Lady Fei Zhu is her character name. I liked her a lot.
My mistake. Yeah, she comes out, she does a number at the big Fellini-esque party, and it is super hot.
It is. It's very, lesbionic.
Yeah, and she dates Margot Robbie for a while, but then gets told she has to stop, be bad for business for their star to have a relationship. You know the difference.
There's some really great performances.
Oh,
Jean Smart is great.
Oh, she's good.
She has this speech where she tells Brad Pitt what's up with his career. She plays the gossip columnist.
Eleanor St. John, although clearly had a hopping.
Yeah, and she delivers this amazing monologue about immortality and your run as a star is over, but years after you're dead, people are going to see your movie. And it's really great. Really good monologue. I liked so many things about this movie. I just felt that it didn't fit together as smoothly as it could have. Like, on one hand, we've got this heartfelt monologue going on, and then in another scene, they're going out to a place called the Blockhouse.
Okay,
Which is...
So, this is the bookend party, right? We start off at the Fellini-esque party, then there's another couple parties throughout the movie of, you know, classy party that's boring, and then we go to this party.
Right, and then they get tangled up in organized crime, and the organized crime boss...
The organized crime boss is played by Tobey Maguire in what I hope is a new thing, which is young squirrely actor playing the bad guy crazy, like Daniel Radcliffe does these days. Yeah. Tobey, do more of this.
Yeah, Tobey Maguire is all weird in this movie.
He's so weird. I thought he was Kieran Culkin.
He is so weird, I don't feel like he fits in with the rest of the movie at all.
And then he is the gateway to the party at the blockhouse, which is really something.
Right. So basically, one of the characters gets in gambling debt. They're trying to pay him off. They go to the crime lord's house. The crime lord says, guys, you gotta come to this party. It's the only interesting thing happening in Hollywood. And he says, it's out at the blockhouse. So they go out to the blockhouse. And the blockhouse is a series of caves.
It looks like a culvert, I think is the term. It's a big concrete tube that they go into.
And they go down this concrete tube. And on the first floor, there are two women in a cage covered with blood, wearing caveman bikinis, and apparently fighting to the death.
And there's people with unusually shaped skulls chained to the wall.
Yeah, there's people with acromegaly. There are people with different... It is a display for people who are... Yeah, it's
and they go
what
down...
we would call in the old days, I guess, a show.
They go down a couple floors. They pass an alligator.
They have to pass a moat filled with an alligator. The next floor... What?
I don't remember. Oh, that was the one with the...
There's a little...
The little people doing right. Something. We don't see what it is, but we're pretty sure it's unwholesome.
And it is being done to a song about a monkey.
Yeah. Don't know. I know that Pet My Pussy, the song that Anime Wong sang earlier, is being played here, which I thought was fun.
Yes, but it's a different version. Yeah.
And then we get to the guy the crime lord wants them to meet, because the crime lord knows this guy who can be the ultimate warrior.
Yeah, this guy is an amazing. He's just waiting to be in a movie. And they cross the alligator pit and they go down a torchlight. I am not kidding you here. A torchlight cave.
So that the crime lord vanishes into the darkness after every torch. It looks good. It looks so good.
Oh, the lighting in this movie is... It is a beautiful looking movie. I will give you that.
Lighting, costumes, production design. It's got it all. And the guy they're come to see is a huge jacked muscle guy who eats live rats.
With a mask.
Oh, yeah. He's got a kitty mint thing.
Who eats live rats. And he's like so muscular that he's maybe it's a deformity. It does not look like a normal bodybuilder.
Yeah, this guy is definitely like a pro wrestler or something.
Yeah.
And then some plot happens, the main character has, but
right.
The,
and then,
the point
then, blah,
is the party.
Blah, blah. And I believe that what we're supposed to think, I believe that where they're going with that party is that when, I feel like a lot of this has to do with before and after the Hays Code.
Okay,
like the party before the Hays Code was the crazy, decadent, drugged out party we go to in the first thing. Then movies become more moral and Hollywood has to present a more moral character. And that's when the parties literally go underground, but are far worse than the debauched drug party.
Interesting. So I don't know. That's where the girl what?
I don't know. I lost my train of thought.
Oh, no. Now I have to edit this.
Oh, no. Okay. That's when her career ends, because she is known as the wild girl of the 20s. And now in the 30s, now they've got sound movies and they have... She has to stop dating her girlfriend because not moral, and they're trying to give her a makeover.
Yeah, her identity, Clara Bow was the it girl. Her identity is the wild child because of the titles that appeared in her first movie. By the way, we get to see somebody painting titles, and it is so cool.
Yeah, Monty loves a good title card.
I do love a good title card. And seeing somebody actually painting those letters so carefully, oh.
The guy with the mask was played by someone named Douglas Frutchy.
I see he's got a monster chest
workout.
He's got
a monster chest
workout
going right here. It's the only movie he's done.
All right. Well, clearly somebody told Damien Chazelle, I've got a guy for your movie. And Damien Chazelle looked at him and said,
great, will he eat a rat?
Yeah.
So I still feel that the movie has problems with coherence. I feel it has some tonal issues.
Let me try this on you. It's not just a love letter to cinema. It is cinema in all its form. By the end, it's just flashing random lights and colors in fluid. It's gone beyond narrative structure.
Well, the colors it was flashing were the colors that are on the Technicolor strips. So that's something. Yeah, and at the end, a guy falls... asleep in a theater, and all of a sudden we're in the ending 2001 A Space Odyssey with blinking colors and La Chaîne Andalouse and all kinds of crazy stuff. And that's the filmmaker who does so several times throughout the movie, makes pretty blatant message. There's a lot of not subtlety in this.
Yeah, like there's that one scene where Margot Robbie is on her knees begging for Manny to help her. And then just for a second, he sees her smiling and there's no sound.
Right,
and,
because he's having a flashback to the moment.
Yeah,
to the girl she...
But there's no like framing device around the flashback. It's just like shot of her on her knees, shot of Manny, shot of her on her knees, shot of Manny, shot of her from when he met her, shot of Manny, shot of her on her knees.
Yeah, I liked that. It had a lot going on. I didn't hate it. I felt it was a little preachy.
Yeah, sure. I'll buy that.
It was a little preachy. It really wants films to be important. It wants the whole message of the film to be that one scene from Sullivan's Travels where they go in the movie theater and the movie starts and all of the guys that are prisoner in the South that are in these horrible conditions are able to laugh and enjoy just during the time that movie's on. That is the message that this movie delivers, only in a much less concise form.
Exactly. That's Manny smiling at Singing in the Rain. It's like,
yeah,
look at all of the things movies have done to this poor kid. And yet, that's a pretty good dance scene.
It's a pretty good dance scene. That's because Gene Kelly was not ashamed to torture people.
Yep. Well, to be fair, he's the only one in that dance scene, so he's only torturing himself.
Yeah.
I don't know. So anyway, that's...
Monty loved it.
I loved it. I loved it so much, you guys.
I would certainly watch it again at some point.
Not soon, though. Probably.
Not soon. Not immediate. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's not a little. It is a lot.
It is a lot. But I agree. Like, you look at the other works of Damien Chazelle, this feels like La La Land. It's like the overtones of, you love this, right? You love this? Like, La La Land is all movie musicals. You love movie musicals, right? I hope you love movie musicals. This is a movie musical about movie musicals or something.
I have not seen La La Land. I am unqualified to make any statements about it, but I really loved 10 Cloverfield Lane.
You liked Whiplash too, right?
Everybody loved Whiplash. I felt it was okay.
I don't have any...
Everybody in it was great. There were great performances. It's just not a film... It's not the kind of film I normally...
Yeah, and I don't have any thematic connections between Babylon and 10 Cloverfield Lane.
There aren't
or
any.
Or Whiplash, so I was going for La La Land instead. It's such a weird movie to make, like...
Babylon or La La Land?
Babylon. Like, this is a... very expensive,
vision. This is a crazy, huge personal vision. No one in this film is phoning it in. It's...
like, I can't imagine he got a lot of studio notes. This, like, to...
What would the studio notes be? Have the girl peeing on the guy's face be slightly older?
Yeah.
I don't know. That was my note, was that it would have been better if the girl peeing on the guy's face were old.
Well, that's the thing, right? They kept saying, well, she's underage, and
she
looks dead.
Yeah, they're like, oh, she's just a kid, she's overdosed, but she didn't look like a kid.
Yeah.
I personally do not condone the use of actual 11-year-olds peeing on people in film real life.
We're going to use the explicit tag on this episode, I think.
I think this is an explicit episode.
Here's what I have to say about that. The concept of how young you had to be underage was very different in the 1920s. And if they had done something that someone back in the 1920s would raise an eyebrow at, people in 2023 would have burned the theater.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. There's a scene where Margot Robbie is talking about guys in Hollywood or dudes in Hollywood, and she's talking about fucking Charlie Chaplin. Like, girl, you are 2 decades old for that.
So do you think it's interesting, in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Margot Robbie played an actor, Sharon Tate, and Brad Pitt played her, whatever. Wait, no, he didn't. He played a stuntman.
No.
No, there's Leo. The meme of Leo pointing at the screen is from Leo seeing himself. Yeah,
oh,
Brad Pitt is the stuntman. But anyway, I think it's interesting that they both are back in another movie playing actor, and again, hardly have anything to do with you.
Yeah, it's weird.
This is one of those movies that doesn't even really try to connect the storylines.
It doesn't. That was the other problem I had. I was like, there's three stories here, and they're almost three separate films.
Yeah, Manny goes and helps out Margot, but he's also got all this other stuff to do.
Yeah.
Okay, so backlots.
Okay, here's the thing.
Oh, okay. All right.
Monty loves backlot scenes.
I do. I love a scene where there's a backlot and there's a guy in a spaceman outfit and a guy in half a camel outfit or something.
And they're just background. They're just hanging out in the background while your lead actors are doing their walk and talk. That is a trope that Monty is so fond of.
And you get that a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
When they're shooting the silent movies all on the one big set, because there's no sound problems. I don't know how accurate that is, but I want it to be accurate because it's a really fun...
Well, I watch a lot of Chinese dramas that are filmed all in this one giant studio called Hengjin Studios. And sometimes in the behind the scenes, you can actually hear and see people filming other shows in the backgrounds, like in the next lot over. And they're not in enclosed spaces. You'll just see people walking past that are in a different... And in the behind the scenes, all the Chinese dramas are dubbed. And that's because if they need a wind, instead of using like a normal fan, they just use a leaf blower. They're just out there with these incredibly loud leaf blowers directly in the actor's faces. And then next door, there's somebody doing a love scene for a different show with these leaf blowers going in the background. So I really liked the scene where they went out to where the studio was filming and there were like 10 movies going on at once.
There's this one really fancy extended shot around all of the little sets.
Yeah, and you see that they're filming a Chinese movie, a slapstick comedy, a Alexander Nevsky-type medieval combat.
A bar scene.
And they're all just little, like in little shacks built around this field. I like that a lot. I don't know how realistic it was. There were some things that I thought were completely unreal. Like there's the guy that's filming the medieval battles has like 10 cameras. And they all get destroyed during the battle scene.
As do at least one crew member who gets impaled by a flag.
Yeah.
Like, the safety protocols were clearly not in place.
No, because they, in the old gangster movies, they used live ammunition shot at the actors. True fact.
Oh, I wish they'd done that in this movie.
Jimmy Cagney.
So, yeah.
Dodging bullets for your entertainment.
So, yeah, Reyes has an objection to the idea that you would just keep filming until you had destroyed all 10 cameras.
I do.
And then send somebody to drive back down to Hollywood to get another camera.
Because I know that in the making of films that used that kind of stuff, like the silent version of Ben-Hur, they were very careful with where they're...
My argument is that Ben-Hur was made after this. Like, you only need to lose your 10 cameras once before you say, all right, guys... We're not going to send the cameraman right into the middle of the action like this.
We're going to choreograph the action so it moves around the cameraman.
Yeah, we're going to do... Eventually, you get to George Miller where it's like, I'm going to put this camera here. You're going to move 5 seconds. There, you're done. Now we're going to shoot this camera at this angle or you're going to move two
seconds.
Yeah, this
is the antithesis of Fury Road.
This is, we got this army. You guys run at each other. We're going to film what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a mess. And although it isn't based on Hollywood Babylon, there's a lot of references to Hollywood Babylon.
Yeah.
The University of Southern California football team show up at a party as Margot Robbie's slaves invited them to her house and beat them in a poker game.
Craps game.
A craps game, which feeds into the rumor that Clara Bow slept with the entire U of Southern California team.
I want to say those USC football guys, they seemed like in a really good mood. Like,
right.
She had written dumb fuck on one of their chests, but he was like, hey, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I did make me wonder if there was a final bet where she would have become their slave instead.
I don't know.
Like,
there's a Fatty Arbuckle. Obviously, the fat guy peeing on him, she dies is obviously the Fatty Arbuckle.
Poor Fat.
Yeah, he didn't anything.
Poor
wrong.
Roscoe, I meant to say.
Poor Rob.
He didn't like being called Fatty, which
was
he made his money as an actor called Fatty Arbuckle. Once he was directing, he preferred to be called Roscoe.
That's
and who
true.
Could blame
and
him?
Honestly, there were people that had terrible, terrible.
Yeah.
I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That poor. Anyway.
So, Babylon, right?
Yeah. Babylon. We watched it. That's what we think of it. It's probably a super podcast.
It's like 40 minutes right now.
And we have no idea what we're going to watch next week.
Yeah, we have not even looked at the release schedule.
I'm not going to. I'm just going to wait until Friday and what's at the theater.
We might see Babylon again.
I don't think so. We can't do two podcasts unless I completely come around on it and decide it's brilliant, in which case that would be hilarious. Right. But I don't think that's going to...
All right. It sounds like we're not doing Babylon next week, but we are, I promise you, going to watch a movie and record a podcast about it next week.
Yes. We're on a schedule now, and it's a wee schedule. Suck it up.
Okay, bye.